With the advances that we've seen in the past couple of years for what are often shorthanded as LGBT rights, the situation for subgroups of this blanket label is not uniform. Certainly, the transgender community faces unique and daunting hurdles. But as we wrap up what leading advocacy groups have deemed Bisexual Awareness Week, where do things stand for this minority group, both in society and especially in faith communities? The Religious Institute, always at the forefront of important issues at the intersection of faith and sexuality, has just published a comprehensive new guidebook titled Bisexuality: Making the Invisible Visible in Faith Communities. And I'm very pleased to welcome the lead author, Marie Alford Harkey, to State of Belief Radio. Marie, welcome.
Thank you so much, Reverend Gaddy. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
What are some of the unique challenges faced by bisexual persons in a faith environment?
Well, invisibility is exactly the challenge that is faced by bisexual people, both in faith communities and in society. One of the most striking findings that we discovered in working on the book was that fully 40% of the LGBT community identifies as bisexual. So they make up the largest portion of the LGBT community, and yet they are the ones who are the most invisible. And, you know, you can sort of see why. It's because we make assumptions. We assume what a person's orientation is by who they're partnered with. So when I, for example, show up in a new faith community with my wife, people assume I'm a lesbian, and as luck would have it, they're right. Mm-hmm. But when my friend John shows up in a new congregation with his wife, people also assume that he's straight, and that's not correct because mm-hmm. he identifies as bisexual. So it's definitely the invisibility that is the biggest harm for bisexual people. Mm-hmm. One of the other really interesting findings from the Pew survey was that 70% of lesbian and gay people say that most of the important people in their life know about their sexual orientation. But strikingly, for bisexual people, that number is 28%.
Is it safe to say that there is a reticence among bisexual persons to talk about their bisexuality?
Well, yeah. And part of the reticence comes from the societal stereotypes and myths that surround being bisexual and surround bisexual people. The myths about, for example, that bisexual people can't be monogamous or that bisexual people are taking advantage of straight privilege. And the sad thing is that what we find is that bisexuals are marginalized both in the LGBT community and in the wider community for some of those same reasons. And so it's really hard for bisexual folks, A, to come out, so mm-hmm. to speak, and to figure out how to keep coming out in different settings. But it's also about the assumptions and the harmful myths and stereotypes that are out there that make it difficult for bisexual people to feel comfortable coming out. And that's what the guidebook is all about, is creating an atmosphere, whether you know you have bisexual people in the congregation or not, mm-hmm. that feels safe for people of all sexual orientations so that their faith community feels like a safe place.
Marie, what made you think this was the right time for a guidebook on bisexuality?
Interestingly, you know, what we know is that there's lots of progressive congregations, denominations, and movements that have been working really hard to explicitly welcome and affirm lesbians and gay men. And that work has been going on for 50 years or more in many denominations. But what we're becoming aware of is that there have been some progressive congregations that have done a good job with paying attention to gender identity mm-hmm. and to the unique needs and concerns of transgender people, but there is almost nothing out there addressing the unique concerns and needs of bisexual people. Mm-hmm. When we originally talked about this project with the American Institute of Bisexuality, what we assumed is that we would be curating a lot of resources and gathering things that people of faith and faith leaders could use. And what we discovered was that there was just very little to curate. There were very few congregational resources. Almost all of them were more than 10 years old. And right before the book went to press, I got an email from one of the big LGBT faith organizations, and they have a huge clearinghouse of resources. And they asked if we knew of any resources on bisexuality for congregations. was really fun to say, why, yes, actually, we're writing that book.
That's wonderful. Tell us, what are the key issues that you address in the book?
So the book is actually divided into three parts, and we start with sort of bisexuality basics. So we talk a little bit about what is sexual orientation, and we pull together some really good research about definitions and models of sexual orientation that go beyond sort of binary understandings. We talk about myths and facts, the prevalence of bisexuality, and about our obligation as faith communities and religious people to help heal the suffering that is actually worse for bisexual people than lesbians and gay people, just because of the fact that they're so invisible and because of the stereotypes that are out there. And then in the second part of the book, we address sacred texts and religious traditions and do some really interesting theological reflection and talk about denominational statements. And then in part three, we get down to the sort of nitty-gritty of what can congregations do to be more welcoming and affirming, what do religious professionals need to do to be bisexually healthy, and we talk about worship, preaching, all of the different kinds of areas mm-hmm. that are part of a faith community's life.
So what kind of misinformation is out there that's getting in the way of progress?
Yeah, there's so much misinformation. Some of the myths that we address center around, for example, bisexuality is a phase. It's just something that people go through before they're ready to identify as gay or lesbian, or that bisexual people just don't exist. They're just afraid to come out as gay or lesbian. And so we actually go into the scientific research that says, actually, no. There have been studies that show that bisexuality is a distinct and enduring sexual orientation. There's also this one that came up in the Larry King interview with Anna Paquin, right, that if you get married, if you're a bisexual person and you get married, then you're not bisexual anymore, which is, you know, sort of an interesting argument, as if somehow, you know, if you're a heterosexual person and you're not married, you're not heterosexual anymore. And there's also some really pervasive, harmful myths about bisexual people in relationships with people of another sex are taking advantage of straight privilege. And that's one of those myths and stereotypes that really gets bandied about in the LG community. And it's really hard for bisexual people to feel safe in those communities, even though they claim to be LGBT communities.
Right.
I think probably the most prevalent one is that bisexual people are promiscuous. They can't possibly be monogamous. I would love to just read you a little blurb from the book from Reverend Janet Edwards, who's an out bi Presbyterian minister, where she talks about a pastor friend invited her to have coffee after he heard that she's bi, because she came out fairly publicly. She wrote about it from a faith perspective. And she said he wanted to warn her that adultery is prohibited by the Ten Commandments. And she said she was really confused by this until what she realized was he assumed that because she was bisexual, there was no way she could possibly be faithful in her marriage.
Yeah. We have heard people in the church say, well, it's all right that you're a homosexual, you just can't act on it. When it comes to bisexuality, are we asking that the bisexual person discipline herself or himself regarding one aspect of their sexuality?
If you say to someone who identifies as gay or lesbian, you're welcome to be gay or lesbian and be part of our faith community, but you can't act on that.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is true as if you say to a bisexual person, it's fine that you're bisexual, but if you're going to end up with a partner, you need to end up with a partner of the opposite sex. That's sort of saying the same thing, right? Which is that you don't get to live out who you are as a human being. We're going to circumscribe that as a particular faith community. And thankfully, there are an awful lot of faith communities where that is no longer the case for lesbians and gay men.
What actions by faith leaders and communities of faith would be most helpful? What are you saying in the guidebook about that?
So the number one thing is to not make assumptions about a person's sexual orientation. And that goes back to the anecdote I related about just because someone walks into your community with someone of the same or another sex doesn't mean you know what you need to know about their sexual orientation. And so the best thing to do is to not make an assumption until you know otherwise. And mm-hmm. when you know, it's no longer an assumption.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think that is really true is that educating oneself about bisexuality and about sexual orientation and human sexuality in general allows us, and especially allows religious leaders, to have an awareness that just you can't go back from. When Reverend Hafner and I started working on this book, the more we got into the material, the more we realized we were becoming bisexual activists, because you can no longer not notice all the ways in which bisexual people are erased from the conversation, both in lesbian and gay spaces as well as in larger society. So just that awareness and paying attention to language, for example, it's not gay marriage, it's same-sex marriage, or it's marriage equality. It's not gay rights, it's human rights, or at the very least, LGBT rights. And having an awareness, we caution faith communities that if you're going to say you're welcoming of LGBT people, then you need to make sure that that's actually true. And you probably want to say the whole thing every once in a while. You want to actually say lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender so that people get the idea that you're understanding that all of those different identities interact in different ways.
Marie, what comes first? Increased bisexual visibility to demonstrate that a need for inclusivity exists, or self-education on the part of leaders and communities to create a more welcoming environment?
You know, what I really hope is that the self-education comes first. And one of the reasons for that is that no matter whether we know that there are bisexual people in our congregations or not, the ideal, right, is to create safe and healthy places for people of all sexual orientations and regardless of sexual identity or attraction. What is also really wonderful is that we don't have to focus on just welcoming those poor people who have been shunned. What we can also focus on is what are the gifts of reflecting on human sexuality in all of its complexity and diversity? What gifts does that bring us as a faith community in terms of our theological reflection, in terms of how we understand justice issues and how we act on those? I really do hope it's the awareness that comes first rather than some sort of crisis of need, or, you know, it is my hope that every congregation out there would say, well, yes, we definitely need to do this. We need to see this book. Becoming a congregation that is more welcoming of bisexual persons actually affects a whole lot more people than just those who identify as bisexual, because there are any number of folks who have attractions or feelings or behaviors that we might label or that scientists might label bisexual, who themselves have never used that label, but who would be amazed and so gratified to hear themselves in a conversation, in a sermon, in a teaching. And so I think that that's a really important point for faith leaders to keep in mind, that you're not always going to know who the folks are out there.
Marie Alford Harkey is Deputy Director for the Religious Institute, an aspirant for Holy Orders in the Episcopal Diocese of Connecticut. Marie is a Provincial Coordinator for Integrity USA, the organization working for full inclusion of LGBT people in Episcopal faith communities. She's the lead author of the new guidebook from the Religious Institute titled Bisexuality, Making the Invisible Visible in Faith Communities. It's available online at religiousinstitute.org. Thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much, Reverend Gaddy. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. The ongoing financial support of State of Belief listeners is essential to keeping this show on the air. If you've made a donation this week, thank you, thank you. If you find value in what we're doing, I urge you to join other generous supporters today. Please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. The kind of inclusive, respectful approach to interreligious dialogue that we strive to present every week is virtually impossible to find anywhere else. So please consider helping us to keep this important work going. Stateofbelief.com is where you'll find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, watch in-studio videos, read transcripts, and sign up for our podcasts. Stay in touch with us this week, all week long, on Facebook and Twitter. The listener line is 202-681-4246. As always, we encourage you to tell other people about this show and encourage them to listen, and after they listen, to get back in touch with you so that you can have a conversation of your own about what we've had conversations about on the air. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. What an intersection. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he was.